Welcome back, everybody, to another exciting edition of True Crime on Easy Street. We are coming to you with our brand new soundboard.
That we're still tinkering with.
Well, we're not doing anything. Yeah. Katie's having to learn as we go. But this new soundboard is, it's nice. Look how nice that is, Scott.
We're not going to make the sounds that we were making a minute ago with it, are we?
I hope Katie can eventually learn. There is a sensor button on this new soundboard. So, Scott, give it a whirl. Let's show everybody what the new soundboard can do. Will you just talk?
Everybody can go.
I should have let up on the button a little earlier, but we're learning.
We're still learning.
That was awesome. I'm so excited about this new feature. My name's Kelly Turner, and I'm not a doctor.
Scott Wright, mediocre journalist.
Katie Givens, not a lawyer.
So I'm headed to Puerto Rico in June.
Arriba.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm so excited. But I'm trying to decide from the airport to the hotel, which is about an hour's drive.
The worst.
Do I get a rental car? Do I take the shuttle?
Shuttle.
Do I Uber?
Shuttle or Uber. Don't get the car because then you're going to have to pay to park the car.
Well, I was looking at the prices of various things and it's going to be expensive to Uber around, especially we're not in San Juan. We're away from San Juan. So I'm a little bit nervous. So I was all excited. I was thinking I'm going to do this rental car. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be about even to park the car. It's going to be about the same price. And so someone at work said, do they drive on the opposite side? I was like, no, they drive on the same side we do. You don't even need a passport to go to Puerto Rico.
Yeah, it's an American protectorate.
But then somebody else hit me with this. And they said, no, you know, everything's in kilometers and not miles. And I said, well, you know what? I'm out. So I'm going to shuttle and Uber. So however much it costs me.
I'm sure you could figure out the conversions.
I hate conversions. Mm. I hate it.
Yeah, I don't.
I can't do it.
I'm not big on the whole
How many kilometers is a mile? Does anybody know?
I know that 88 kilometers per hour is 55 miles per hour.
Good to know. Learn something new. Yeah.
And a 10 kilometer foot race is 6.2 miles.
Yeah, because a 5K is 3.1.
Right.
I knew that.
That's all I know.
So now
I'm
going to have to be thinking in terms of 5K and 10K the whole time I'm there if I do a rental car.
Yep. Sounds like a pain in the...
Is it just you
bleep.
And KT?
Yeah. Well, there's some other people that's going to be there from work, but they're coming in a day early. So
it's just y'all having to figure out where to get.
Yes. Gotcha. Yes. So that's... Yeah. I don't know what to do now.
Shuttle.
I guess.
I'm thinking the shuttle.
Shuttle, stay on the resort, I guess. I don't know. Mm. It's going to be a great time, though. It's going to be... The place is beautiful.
Unless it's one of those shuttles that stops at four or five different places on the way. That sucks when I know in Vegas, if you take the shuttle, they're going to run you around town.
That's kind of what I was thinking because I've done that before.
They drop you off at every casino.
I was the last stop.
Yeah.
And so
I always am too. It never fails.
It took me like 2 hours to get somewhere that would take 45 minutes.
Yeah. Don't get caught up in that.
I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe you can book a shuttle just from your resort.
Yeah, if they have their own shuttle.
I'll try to look and see.
That is the worst part, getting from the hotel to, because, we're going to Mexico here in a couple weeks. Because
in your mind, the vacation has already begun, but it hasn't.
No.
You're just sitting there with your luggage between your legs, waiting on somebody to come get in the van and drive.
Your sun hat.
Yeah, my bag is always too big to be between my legs. It's always
I've seen your luggage.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's not good.
No, it's bad.
Yeah. All right, so we have something... we're going to mix it up a little bit today. We have a special guest with us. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce to you Stephanie West. Yes.
Applause.
All right. Say something and let's see if she bleeps you the way she bleeped me.
I am not a teacher anymore.
Oh, there's the... Yay! There you are.
We have applause now.
Oh, yeah. So we have Stephanie West, not a teacher.
Not a teacher.
Okay, excellent.
Very nice.
Fits right in.
I love that. Stephanie has been researching the topic that we're covering today. If you've looked at the title, you know what we're discussing today. And it's going to be interesting to get her perspective because when this event happened, Stephanie was a teacher.
Yes, it was my first year teaching.
Oh, great.
I was obsessed with this case.
I bet. Especially being a new, fresh out of college,
you got your teaching job, you're super excited, then something like this happens and changes the whole game for everybody.
Absolutely.
And we're going to get to that. We're going to talk with her about all of that.
All of that.
Yeah. So are there any shout outs or anything that we need to get to? Okay. Yeah. Scott has a shout out.
Alexandria Robertson.
Oh, okay.
Reached out to us on Facebook to let us know that Coach Ricky Austin from Spring Garden, you know, we did the Boston Marathon bombing a few weeks ago. Coach Ricky Austin was a runner in that Boston Marathon.
Wow.
In 2013. Wow. I didn't know that, or we would have talked to him before the show.
Was he okay?
Yeah, he had already finished and was in his hotel room when the bombs went off. But I didn't know that.
Sounds like Coach Austin to have already, be done.
Yeah, I think he's been doing that for a long time.
So he was one of the faster.
He's one of the faster runners. Mm-hmm. But thank you, Alexandria Robertson, for pointing that out.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And for listening to the show. I guess she listened.
Yeah, of course she did.
I got the impression that she had.
And I've got one too. We had a new response on Spotify. You know, we had the little Spotify question.
Yeah.
Yes.
From I would have thought her name was Carrie Behrens, but in parentheses she put Kari.
Kari. So I think we mentioned her a couple of weeks ago. She had reached out on Facebook.
Okay.
But now Spotify.
I've seen. Yep. Yeah. And so I thought that was fun. The little.
Okay, thank you for letting us know. Yeah, we want to get that right. Mm-hmm. So thank you.
I have an update on my remote control.
Did you find it?
No, it's still missing. That's it. That's the update.
Terrible. So you haven't had a woman over there to look for
it. No, there's been no.
I can't find it. The dogs can't find it. It's gone.
That's going to be my mission this week. Just come find that remote control.
Oh, you probably walk right in and find it. That's what I keep saying.
In seconds, probably. But I swear I can't find it.
And it's got this bright blue case.
Yeah.
Okay, whatever.
Practically glows in the dark. It's so bright blue.
To be continued with
that.
And
I know one of your dogs didn't eat it.
No, their mouths won't open wide enough.
About the size of the remote.
Yeah.
For those of you who follow us on Instagram, Stephanie is the owner of Buddy the Cat. We put his photo up. We mentioned Buddy, and we mentioned her husband Shorty a lot. And just to give you a little context on how we know Stephanie here and her whole fam damnly.
And to plug it, we've already mentioned Instagram, Facebook, and Spotify.
Yeah.
And we haven't even started yet.
I know. That's
this is great.
Yeah. Yeah. Back in season one, Stephanie's sister, Stacy, was on with us. She's a retired Marine police.
The new board has everybody feeling creative this morning.
I'm nicer than she is, by the way.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I don't think she listens, so that's good. You can just talk away.
Totally get away with that.
Anyway, so thank you for being here, Stephanie. We got our shout outs. Thanks to the folks for listening. Do we have any shout downs this week? You know, we do that occasionally.
I'm saving one for next week.
All right. Good deal. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's get to it this week. Scott is in the big chair. Take it away.
You guys ready for this one?
No.
I mean, there's no really good way to be ready.
There's really not. So the more I dug into this story, the less I wanted to tell it.
I know.
Right. Especially in two episodes, like we're going to tackle this one, but there's really no other way to do it. You've really got to make this a two-part episode. So just let the word Columbine hover in your brain for a moment. Mm-hmm. And speaking of moments in today's story, we're going to tell this tale in two episodes, like I said, because there are a lot of significant moments in this story. But truly, though, if we're going to tell it correctly, it's got to be two parts. So despite the fact, with the exception, I guess, of the Clutter murders in 1959, which we've done on this show before, this is probably the least favorite thing I've ever done.
Wow. It's a rough one.
Mm-hmm. One of the books I read about Columbine while I was doing the research, the book was described as being told in the same fashion that Truman Capote wrote about the Clutters in Cold Blood. The reporter who wrote the foreword of the book actually physically, he said, this is told in the same way. It's a novelized form of the story. That was one of the books that I read, and it was a really good book. And I'll mention the title later, but there are a lot of moments in this tragedy or a lot of moments where this tragedy could have been avoided. Mm-hmm. There's so many. And we all know that it wasn't. And some of the resulting moments in the story, we still remember from the news reports from that day. A lot of them we have forgotten. So I'm not going to get mad at listeners if they tell us later that they wish we hadn't told them about the images or the words or the tears or the final moments or the screams that we're going to tell you about today.
And we should. I mean, it's relevant to the story.
Well, and don't be surprised if this is not the last time you hear about this, because the 25th anniversary, as you listen at home today on April the 17th, the anniversary is 3 days from now. Mm. The 25th anniversary.
I can't believe it's been 25 years.
So on April the 20th, 1999, there was a school shooting that left 15 people dead. That includes the two shooters. And it was, at the time, it was still a shock to the system of the country. And sadly, that's no longer the case today, not here in this country, not in the world. Did you guys even hear about a couple of weeks ago in Helsinki, Finland? There was a 12-year-old student who killed one of his fellow students and injured two more. They were all 12 years old.
No.
Didn't even hear about it.
Oh.
The word you're looking for is desensitized.
Yep, that's exactly it.
We have all become desensitized.
Well, and news
shootings.
Media, did they cover it?
Sure. I mean, I found it on the Associated Press website.
Okay.
But it's up to newspapers and radio stations and TV stations to pick it up and tell the story. And if they don't, because
they just don't.
It just goes in the already done that pile.
Is it because of the, it's in Finland, or is it because there's just, this is just so common now?
It's just gotten to where.
I mean, it seems like it's very common. Well, I guess you have, do you have any statistics or anything for us?
Yeah,
or,
I've got some stuff that we'll go over, sure.
Right, okay.
But if I read you a list of all the school shootings in this country alone, your eyes would start to glaze over.
Yeah.
You'd shrug at the horror for a minute, or shudder at the horror, and then you'd shrug your shoulders and turn around and continue with your day, because you're desensitized. And the list is much longer than you think. Go to Wikipedia and type in school shooting.
Oh, no.
And you will find yourself staring at a long, long, long list that goes all the way back to the mid-1800s in this country alone. I'll give you one example. In 1856, a schoolmaster warned his students not to play with his caged pet sparrow that he had in the schoolroom.
Okay.
And so he left the schoolroom for a minute. And of course, one of them took the bird out and ended up killing the bird.
Oh.
Either by accident or on purpose. The story in the newspaper didn't explain. The schoolmaster didn't think it was an accident, so he grabbed the boy and jerked him into another room and strangled him. Not to death, but just strangled him as punishment. And when the boy's father found out about it, he came to the school and shot and killed the schoolmaster. That was in Florence, Alabama in 1856.
Wow.
So there's our Alabama connection from 168 years ago.
Wow. You know, though, I mean, that's a strange story that... Mm-hmm. I've never heard.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
Wow.
It was brand new to me.
So what happened to the father, do you know?
I didn't get that far.
Didn't you just...
Yeah. It was literally a one-paragraph story in a newspaper from 1856. I saw the original, a copy of the original story. And that was all it said.
Oh my gosh. Wow. An Alabama tie. How about that?
There had been other major, honest-to-goodness, massacres in schools in this country before Columbine. There were a couple that I'm going to mention briefly today, and then we'll talk a little bit more about them next week.
Okay.
You guys ever heard of the Bath school bombing in Michigan?
No.
When did that happen?
1927.
Yes, I have.
Okay. There was an angry man set off a bomb in a school and killed dozens of kids.
For the longest time, it was the most death in a school-related incident.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about that next week. And then there's the University of Texas school shooting.
Yes.
The clock tower shooting from 1966. We'll go into a little bit more about both of those next week.
Okay.
But those were two big ones that had already happened. But Columbine was different for a lot of reasons, and we'll get into them. According to security.org, there have been over 300 fatal school shootings in this country in its history so far, and sadly, we're still counting. Sandy Hook in Connecticut, Parkland, Texas, Parkland, Florida, Uvalde, Texas. We don't have the time or the stomach to list them all, so we're not going to. But if you've got a full day at work, nothing to do, Google school shootings, you'll have reading material until it's time to go home.
It's so heartbreaking.
It really is, because I honestly don't remember a time before school shootings.
Yeah.
Because this would have happened right before I started kindergarten. And so they were just a fabric.
You're just part of your life. Yeah.
I was in college, so it was so odd for me.
Yeah.
You know, I had gotten through.
Yeah, I was already here, and so we never experienced it as school students ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah. OK, okay, so it's, I mean, that's sad. It's a sad commentary on us all, but we're not here to preach.
Right.
True crime on Easy Street. We're here to inform.
Yep.
So let's get started informing our listeners. The information that we're going to hear today comes primarily from three books that I read about Columbine. The first is titled simply Columbine by Dave Cullen from 2009. The second is Columbine, A True Crime Story by Jeff Cass. That's the one that's written kind of like In Cold Blood. It's told in the same fashion. And then the third one, and Stephanie has read it too, it's titled A Mother's Reckoning from 2016, and it was written by the mother of one of the shooters at Columbine, Sue Klebold.
Heartbreaking. Very.
So Columbine, let that name float in your head for just a second. One more second. The name comes from a flower. There's a little flower that grows in that part of the country at those altitudes and those latitudes, and it's called a little five-petaled flower. It can be in multiple colors. Anyway, that's where the word Columbine comes from. And now let's go to 1999 to Columbine High School. The first thing you need to know about Columbine is that it doesn't even officially exist. It's not an incorporated metropolitan area.
Oh, the city doesn't exist.
Right. Okay. There's no city hall. There's no post office. So a lot of times when this story was told, the dateline said Littleton, Colorado. That was the nearest incorporated town, although technically it's across the river in another county. But Littleton, Colorado and Columbine were associated with each other when the story was being told, and that was why. The closest anybody comes to officially recognizing Columbine as an official community is the U.S. Census, which calls it a census-designated place, which is basically nothing more than a group of people who all live in the same location, a location with a recognized name.
Mm-hmm.
30,000 people live in this place called Columbine. So that's like the entire population of Cherokee County in this suburban, sprawling community.
Okay.
In 1999, there were about 2,000 students at Columbine High School, and they were grades 9 through 12. And the juniors and seniors from that year's class had attended their prom the weekend before the tragic events of Tuesday, April the 20th. As you listen, today is the 25th anniversary of that junior-senior prom on the April the 17th. Frank DeAngelis, Mr. D, the kids called him. He was the principal at Columbine. And on Friday, April the 16th, he gathered the 2,000 kids in the gymnasium for an assembly. And he warned them about drinking and driving and being careful on the ride up to Denver for the prom.
Mm-hmm.
He told the students that he had seen teenage tragedy when he was a teenager. His buddy from college had been killed in a motorcycle accident. He told the students, "I can remember being in the waiting room and seeing his blood on the floor, so don't tell me it can't happen." In closing, he said to the students, "Open your eyes, look to the left, look to the right. I want every one of you back here Monday morning." And on Monday morning, all 2,000 kids were back. 24 hours later, Mr. D would watch helplessly along with the rest of the nation and most of the world as 24 of his students and faculty members were loaded into ambulances and driven to trauma units at local hospitals. 15 more, including the two shooters, were dead inside.
That gives you chills.
It does. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have chills.
Mm. Actually, two of them were dead outside, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
There were 15 dead altogether. What had begun as a beautiful spring day in that census-designated place 10 miles south of downtown Denver would become the site of not the first school shooting in recent U.S. history. That terrible trend had begun a year and a half earlier. There were shootings in Bethel, Alaska. There was one in Pearl, Mississippi, West Paducah, Kentucky, and Stamps, Arkansas. Maybe some of those places and names ring bells. It really didn't for me.
They don't ring bells.
In the 2 years before Columbine, there had been at least four in the recent history of school shootings. Those had preceded it.
Wow.
And the list stops there for us, but it goes on and on. But on that day, April the 20th, 1999, the events at Columbine would combine to become, up to that time, the deadliest shooting in American history, school shooting in American history. 24 injured, 15 dead. And next week, we will tell you the innocent victims' names. When we talk about the story, we will list all of their names. Today, we are going to talk about the two shooters at Columbine. And you probably remember their names, Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. And that's just the way they wanted it. They wanted you to remember their names. in case you'd forgotten that, and we'll explain it as we go along. Eric Harris had been 18 years old for just 11 days on April the 20th, 1999, and he was the shorter of the two shooters. He was 5'9", and by most of the accounts that I have read, he was the mastermind of Columbine. If either of our two shooters was a psychopath, it was Eric Harris.
Mm. Yes.
And we will dig further into that diagnosis with Kelly's help as we go along. Harris's partner in mass murder that day was Dylan Klebold. He was 6'3". He had not yet turned 18. His birthday was September the 11th.
Ooh.
Of course, that wasn't the horrible day that we all know it as now. Just yet, it would be two more years before that happened. But he was still 17. And Klebold was not a psychopath by most of the post-mortem psychological diagnoses that I have read. And as his journey would later reveal, his journal rather, would later reveal, he was secretly very, very depressed and suicidal. Mm-hmm. And I use the word secretly because even after the events of April the 20th, Dylan Klebold's parents and friends claimed to have absolutely no idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how that usually goes.
Of what was going on in his head.
They were completely shocked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the book that I mentioned that Stephanie has read, Sue Klebold makes no excuses for her shortcomings as a mother. And I think to this day, she is tormented by those shortcomings.
At 100%,
yeah.
The woman probably blames herself every day.
Yeah.
Still.
She explains in the book's foreword that she eventually decided to publish what was going to initially just be a private journal that she kept for her own sanity. Mm-hmm. But she decided to publish it eventually in an attempt to reach out to other parents so that perhaps that they would be able to see through the facade like the one that had so completely fooled her in the years before Columbine. Mm-hmm. No one knows exactly when Harris and Klebold began plotting the Columbine massacre, but it was at least a year and a half in advance based on evidence. And we'll explain that. The plan was a lot more sophisticated than I remembered when I started doing research. To begin with, on the morning of the massacre, the two of them had driven to a vacant lot a few miles from Columbine High School and had set up one of their homemade propane tank bombs to go off at a predetermined time. It was 11:14 a.m. that morning. And this was to distract the police and the fire department. Mm-hmm. Get them headed in the wrong direction while they drove back to school and set up the rest of their plan. The next thing for them to do was to walk inside the school cafeteria carrying two oversized athletic duffel bags with more propane tank bombs inside. And they put them in the cafeteria where there were beams in the floor that were exposed that held up the second floor. The plan was for the bombs to go off there, kill a bunch of people inside, and collapse the second floor onto the first floor. Mm. That was the plan. That was supposed to happen at 11:17 a.m. And that was timed perfectly, Eric Harris wrote later, because he had watched how the lunchroom filled up every day. And he knew that at 11:17 was when most people, there were more people inside. Some came in and grabbed lunch and went outside if the weather was nice, like it was this day. But that was when it was the maximum rush of people into lunch.
Yeah, he had... It's almost like he'd done some recon.
Yes, he definitely had. This. Yeah.
And
there was a list where he had written down exactly what time everything was going to happen.
And I guess my question is, and you may not be able to answer this, how was he able to be in the lunchroom at various times to see all of that? Or was that just like the way the schedule was at the high school?
Columbine was an open campus. So if you were old enough to drive, you were allowed to leave. You had 45 minutes, I think, to eat lunch. So you could go to Wendy's down the street or to the Dairy King.
You could just come and go.
Yeah, you could come and go. So, and I know that Harris and Klebold had a video class together. Mm-hmm. So maybe they had some leeway to move around the school that some other kids didn't. Maybe as long as you're carrying a camera down the hallway, somebody thinks you're on a class assignment.
Gotcha.
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah.
It would be legitimate. I mean...
Right.
Yeah,
especially in a video production class.
And I guarantee you that probably happened because if he's thought if he's thought so much about all the other things,
yeah,
he thought about that
sure,
too.
He did. So. And here's another part of the plan that a lot of people have forgotten about. I had 45 minutes after those bombs were going to go off in the school, and everybody's going to come rushing out, And Klebold and Harris are going to shoot them as they come out the door, fleeing the fire inside.
I didn't know that. Oh,
at
my gosh.
45 minutes after that, two more bombs were supposed to go off in the parking lot. They had each rigged their own cars to explode with more propane bombs and gas cans filled with gasoline. The plan was, they think, to go off just about the time the ambulances got there. And all the other school kids had rushed outside into what they thought was the safety of the parking lot.
Oh, gosh.
That was part of the plan. The code name that Harris and Klebold had come up with for their operation was NBK, and that was short for the 1994 Oliver Stone film Natural Born Killers.
Oh, Lord.
When they wrote about it in their journal, NBK was their code for this plan.
Mm-hmm. Was Eric obsessed with that movie?
Yes.
Was it one of the... Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Quentin Tarantino wrote the screenplay, the original screenplay for Natural Born Killers, even though Oliver Stone directed it. So you can imagine, even if you've never seen the movie, and Katie, I'm looking at you.
I was looking.
It's a bizarre movie with a ton of violence. It is a very bizarre movie,
yes. A ton of violence. So you can just imagine Quentin Tarantino, how violent the movie was. Basically, the short version of the movie is, it's the story of two victims of traumatic childhoods who become mass murderers and are irresponsibly glorified by the media.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that was their plan too. Eric Harris in particular was counting on being glorified by the media for the havoc that he would bring down on Columbine. That was the plan. There's this great line from one of the Batman movies with Christian Bale where Michael Caine as Alfred is explaining that the Joker is a criminal who just wanted to watch the world burn. Mm-hmm. And that was Eric Harris's plan. He was the Joker. Without the makeup, he was the Joker in this story. And Dylan Klebold was his number one guy, his top henchman.
He was just so...
That's this story.
So full of just hate and rage.
Yes. Yeah. In one journal entry discovered later, Harris set his goal for the death toll at Columbine in the hundreds, maybe up to 500 or more, he wrote.
And how many kids are at the school? Have you seen
2,000. Especially if the bombs went off in the crowded cafeteria and the library came crashing down on it. His hope, Eric Harris's hope, in his own words, was to top Timothy McVeigh, who 4 years earlier had killed 168 people when he bombed the Alfred P. Murray Federal Building in Oklahoma City.
I remember that.
Next April will be the 30th anniversary of that. So, future episode spoiler alert. Harris and Klebold both wore black trench coats and cargo pants to school that morning. The coats to hide their automatic weapons, the cargo pants to conceal their sawed-off shotguns, and dozens of homemade hand grenades and pipe bombs.
And like at this point in history, no one's thinking this is suspicious.
The big coats and the cargo
not especially.
Pants.
There was a group of kids at Columbine that wore trench coats every day. They were called the Trench Coat Mafia, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But it wasn't, there were 1,000 alarm bells that went off, and nobody heard them.
In the 90s, there were, I think, that's when the kind of the dark dress and all of that started to really take off.
The goth, yeah.
And then you had your grunge kids who wore, I don't know that I ever...
Plaid button-up shirts.
Yeah. I don't know in the 90s that I ever wore clothes that actually fit me well until it was the prom or, something like that. My pants were always a size or two big and the big shirts,
Well, in the 90s, too, you didn't have cell phones. School was your social... outlet.
That's right.
That's where you went.
That's a good point.
To see and be seen and, we had kids with gun racks and would go hunting.
Yeah.
Before school.
You would pull up in the parking lot and you could see someone's shotgun in the back of their truck because, and you thought nothing of it because you thought, well, they're going to go hunting afterwards. And honestly, there was no reason for us to think anything because the entire time we were all, I'm looking at Scott, I'm looking at Stephanie, we were all in high school. Nothing ever happened with those.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We had no reason to not trust.
You get expelled for that now.
Now, if someone had walked in with the school with a sawed-off shotgun and armed to the teeth, we might have been like, what in the heck? You know,
but they've got it concealed in coats that are pretty trendy for the the time.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
and it's in April. It's probably still rather cool.
And I know we're going to get into this, but yeah. I'm sorry, Stephanie. I had like a squirrel thought in my head. And I know we're going to get to this, but these guys were kind of oddballs anyway.
They were. They had friends, but they were not they weren't the cool kids.
And so no one really noticed.
Yeah. In a class, what you figure 500 people in every class, if you've got 2,000 kids in grades 9 through 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, we had 33 people in my senior class. I knew everybody.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I knew everybody.
And if you wore a new coat, I knew it was a new coat.
Yeah.
Like, you have never worn that coat before.
Yeah. Yeah. We had 97 and I graduated in 97.
But easy to remember.
Still knew everybody.
Yeah. So on Tuesday, April the 20th, Eric Harris wore a white t-shirt that said natural selection on the front.
Oh, great. Oh.
That was a phrase that he used in his journal from time to time. He would be frustrated about somebody at school or something else that had happened. And he was like, you know, I wish natural selection was really a thing because that guy's an idiot and he shouldn't be here. Mm. Just another reflection of the anger that he had towards pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And in today's society, that would be immediately reported. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Dylan Klebold's black shirt.
We're like,
yeah.
Idiot.
Exactly. That's exactly
right. And probably may have said it right to them. I mean, in the 90s, that we didn't have to text or email somebody when we didn't like them. We just sent it to their face. If you're brave enough, or just keep your mouth shut.
All the way to do
you
it.
You didn't put it on Facebook.
No.
Did
no,
not.
No. It was to their face, but not to the Facebook.
Dylan Klebold's black shirt that he wore that day had wrath written across the front in red letters.
So, yeah, definitely looking back, but, you know, hindsight.
Yeah. They both had their caps turned around backwards and were planning to explode, shoot, or even stab if necessary. They had knives, too, just in case.
Mm-hmm. Now, that's the only thing that you've said that would not have flown in Cherokee County High School. No ball caps.
Mm-hmm.
You are not wearing a ball cap. That would have got him stopped at the door there.
Yeah. But none of this other stuff.
No.
Nothing.
No.
Nothing else that we've listed so far.
Not the shirt, not the trench coat, not the baggy pants, but the ball cap. Yeah. That's another story. Yeah.
So they wanted to kill as many of their fellow classmates as possible and then die in a hail of bullets, just like in the prison riot scene at the end of Natural Born Killers. That was part of the plan. Now, we all know now that their plan did not go according to plan. They didn't kill hundreds that day. As they had hoped, none of their bombs exploded. Yeah, thankfully, none of their bombs exploded.
Good. Mm. Sounds like they're the idiots.
Because they weren't very good at detonators, it turned out later. So the library didn't come crashing down into the cafeteria. Hundreds of kids did not come running outside. But they did still manage to murder 12 of their classmates and one of their teachers before they made the decision to turn their guns on themselves.
Well, they didn't go very long. I mean,
no,
sounds pretty chickeny to me.
Yeah. Well, everybody got away.
I'm glad.
Well, most of the kids got away.
Yeah. Ugh.
And they had planned to die that day. That was their plan one way or the other. And just like in Natural Born Killers in the days after the shootings, the worldwide media tried their harried and often inept best to fill in the blanks about why this had happened. For example, TV and newspapers initially reported that Harris and Klebold had been the goths that we were talking about a minute ago.
And they're not. They were not.
No. Then there was a story that they had belonged to some sort of death cult.
No.
No. Next, they were part of the antisocial clique called the Trenchcoat Mafia. And they weren't.
But that really was something at the school.
It was. Yeah, it was. And what that was, it was a group of kids that just didn't want to dress like everybody else. They wanted to do their own thing. They wanted to stand out in their own way, just like you would have a cute emoji on your phone background today, perhaps. They wanted to wear their trench coats to school.
I was thinking
they wanted to be different.
Extreme things.
Yeah,
not,
that was all
not emoji on my phone.
Yeah,
I'm
sorry.
Thinking of other things today that people dress as.
Yeah. And there was another rumor that the kids, Harris and Klebold, both were spoiled brats. Their parents were both wealthy, so they must be spoiled brats.
Their parents were both wealthy, though?
Yeah, the Klebolds better off than the Harrises, but yeah, they were both middle class to upper middle class families. Pretty much everybody in the Columbine area.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like a wealthy
registers
area.
As middle class and up.
Yeah, it's not a bad area at all.
Not at all.
It's a very nice, beautiful area of Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Sue Klebold did state in her book that people were under the impression that they had more money than they actually did because the aerial views of their home made it look massive, but it was they had really bought it as a fixer-upper and were still in that process. So,
yeah.
Yeah, they were middle class.
It had a pool and a tennis court, and it was up in a secluded area, kind of by itself.
It had
was described
a pool
as,
and a tennis court.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was.
That's why people assume. Okay.
It was described as a mini Red Rocks. You guys know about Red Rocks,
yeah?
The concert venue. It's only a few miles away from here, so the rocks are like that in this area. And this house was sort of secluded and surrounded by these beautiful rocks. So, from the aerial
big
view,
open windows.
Right? Yeah, big windows.
It's a beautiful
like
place.
Said, so. There was another rumor that they were probably gay, that they were being bullied, or that they were bullies. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people who get bullied, I mean, shit rolls downhill, right?
Mm-hmm. Was that true? Were they bullied?
Not, I don't think any more than anybody else
was. I think they were harassed about,
kids
saying you're gay.
Okay.
You're gay or butt buddies.
And they weren't jocks. Mm-hmm. You know, so probably if the football team's walking down the hallway, somebody throws an elbow.
Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, yeah, that was
it happens.
The way thing, it yeah. was.
Bullying was a problem it at was Columbine.
It was a thing in the 90s.
It was a thing everywhere.
Yeah.
But it
was
definitely a thing at Columbine. Now, there's no evidence, never has been, that any of the bullying led to murder. But there is evidence that Principal Frank DeAngelis' exceptional relationship with the kids might have created a blind spot where he just didn't think his kids were those kind of kids.
Did he have a good relationship with these two?
With everybody. Everybody liked Mr. D.
Okay. And they didn't go after Mr. D, did they?
No, but I don't think they targeted cared. Anybody in particular.
Okay. Right. Gotcha.
And that was another thing that turned out not to be true. They weren't targeting the athletes.
Mm-hmm. They were just going for as many as possible.
Yeah.
Didn't matter.
Really no particular aim. Just
gotcha.
That's right.
Body count. That's what we're going for.
That's it. They were going for the body count. The best explanation is that Harris wanted to watch the world burn and Klebold was suicidal, so they packaged each other's desires together and came up with this plan where they both got what they wanted. The tapes and the writings left behind to explain themselves were so disturbing that they were hidden by the sheriff's department for years and eventually destroyed.
Oh.
Lest they end up on YouTube.
Okay, so they had.
Oh, so they've never been released
footage.
Nobody has ever seen what is called the basement tapes, and they're called that because they were predominantly shot in Eric Harris's basement by the two, including one that they shot that morning to explain and apologize to their parents, and not really apologize, but hey, mom and dad, you're going to have to deal with this because when you read this or when you see this, this will have happened.
I can't even imagine from a parent's standpoint, any of the parents involved in this, where your child is a victim or your child is the perpetrator, I can't even wrap my head around it.
A lot of the writings that I have mentioned, they are available on the internet. You can buy the writings of Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, and you can get a transcript of the basement tapes, but the basement tapes have been destroyed by the sheriff's department. We will continue today's story right after this short break. Today's episode is brought to you in part by A&W Outdoor Services, located right here in Cherokee County, Alabama. It's almost time to tidy up the deck, clean the gutters, and spruce up the yard and landscaping around your home, lake house, or creekside cabin. And who better to do that for you than the professional crew at A&W Outdoor Services? Call 256-706-7964 and let Alan and his crew do all the hard work for you so you can spend your time this summer enjoying your piece of Cherokee County in clean, carefree comfort. Call Alan today for a free estimate or to get on the A&W spring schedule before it's full. That's A&W Outdoor Services at 256-706-7964.
Hey guys, do you know what time it is?
Tell us.
It's time to plan your best vacation ever right here in beautiful Cherokee County, Alabama.
Many outdoor adventures await. You can wet a hook in beautiful Weiss Lake, swing away at Cherokee Pines Golf Club, climb to the best view around at Cherokee Rock Village, hike the Little River Canyon National Preserve, take a day's long splash at Pirates Bay Water Park, and there's so much more.
The Cherokee County Chamber of Commerce and Tourism has a full list of recommended lodging facilities, RV sites, and campgrounds, and they're all set up to suit your vacation needs, whatever they may be.
So come see us from wherever you are located. And if you already live right here in Cherokee County, then plan your summer staycation with the Chamber by visiting cherokee-chamber.org.
And thank you to all of our wonderful sponsors. I don't know where to go from here, Scott.
Yeah, me either. I don't want to go anywhere with this.
We're really getting to the end.
Yeah, we're really getting to the bad part. So there's no other way to do it than to just do it.
Yeah. Well, it's like we mentioned, the Columbine shooting in April of 1999 was the first major standoff of the cell phone age. Mm-hmm. CNN was broadcasting a live feed from a local TV station, but they were broadcasting live within 30 minutes of the first shots being fired.
Oh, wow.
And it was an ongoing situation for hours. I remember watching it. Previous school shootings had happened quickly and were over.
Mm-hmm.
Not Columbine. TV news helicopters from Denver were soon swarming overhead. And there were hundreds of police officers, most of them standing around outside with nothing to do because it didn't seem like anybody was in charge or knew exactly how to approach the situation. Then you've got 1,000 panicked school kids running around. And before long, you've got 5,000 panicked parents running around.
And this changed the way police handled.
It definitely did. Yeah.
Wasn't it the turning point?
Yeah. We'll talk next week about tactics and how they changed after this happened.
Got it. Okay.
No one knew yet exactly what was happening for several hours after the first shots were fired at 11:19. And that happened because the bombs didn't go off at 11:17 like they were supposed to. So Harrison Klebold waited 2 minutes and then just started shooting. And we'll tell you, we'll do the TikTok next week.
Okay. You mean the timeline?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Either way.
TikTok means something new now.
You just confused a lot of our younger listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. TikTok means the timeline.
The timeline. Yeah.
We will TikTok you through it.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. Mm-mm. Scratch it. There was a panic that spread rapidly throughout the school once the shooting started. The kids rushed out of the school's 25 exits in every direction. Some of them ran across a soccer field or had to choose between running across a soccer field where they're wide open and exposed for hundreds of yards, or run across the street into a suburban subdivision and try to hide behind a car or a house or a shrub or a tree or anything.
Mm-hmm.
One major reason for the lack of initial police response, other than the fact that it was standard procedure at the time, you just didn't go into an active shooter situation. You set up a perimeter and contained them to that area.
Yeah. So what you did was you made those kids even more fish in a barrel.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you're the FBI, you're thinking, is this a hostage situation or not? And there were FBI agents on the scene because there were FBI agents who had kids in the school.
Oh, gosh.
Because if you've got a gunman with a hostage, that person is going to behave at least somewhat rationally because his success depends on keeping the hostage alive.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've got gunmen and no hostages, that's worse because a human life means nothing to that type of shooter. He's going to behave emotionally, unpredictably, irrationally, self-destructively, possibly.
And their own life means nothing to them. So that nothing means nothing.
What you've got is the potential for homicide followed by suicide.
Yes.
Which, as we all know, is exactly what happened. 6 months after Columbine, the parents of Dylan Klebold, as Mother Sue recounts in the book that we've mentioned, she would finally see the evidence that had been collected against her son and against Eric Harris from a lot of different locations, including search warrants conducted in their homes, in the boys' rooms. It was October of 99 when Sue Klebold and her husband Tom got a call from the sheriff's department. They said, come down. We want you to see this video. Sue Klebold wrote that in one sense, it would be a relief to see and hear for herself the truth. After so many months of speculation in the news media, nobody knows exactly all the things that we've mentioned. Nobody knows what's going on. She thinks maybe this will help me have some clarity about what happened. On the other hand, Sue Klebold wrote that she was deathly afraid that she would learn things about her dead son that would serve to further destroy the image that she was trying to hang on to in her mind.
Yeah. I mean, basically, he's a stranger to her at this point.
Yeah.
And I read one thing in the book that I'll mention, and Stephanie can expound on this. Dylan Klebold's father, they grieved in different ways.
Yes.
Tom grieved over the loss of he thought Dylan was his best friend, and he grieved over the adult that he would never become.
Yeah.
Mom grieved over the little baby that she had raised for 17 years. And that was, you know, this story is not about the Klebolds, but they ended up growing apart. The parents did.
Which is not shocking.
Not at all.
Like, oh.
You'd have to travel pretty far on the internet to find somebody who doesn't think that the parents are responsible.
Now.
For this. I know. And we'll get to that a little bit more in part two.
Yeah, but I figured out. Let me skip ahead.
Yeah. Legally speaking, the public perception of responsibility for school shootings has changed significantly since Columbine 25 years ago. Remember, after the teenager in Oxford High School in Michigan killed four of his fellow students in November of 2021, his parents were ultimately found responsible for that and convicted of involuntary manslaughter, and they were just sentenced a week or so ago to 10 to 15 years in prison each.
Dang.
Because they knew about his behavior.
They had been called
to the school that morning and asked to take him home, and they didn't. And it was later that very same day when he pulled out the gun that they had purchased for him just days before.
Yeah.
Even though he was a minor.
That seems...
I remember that case now.
I have so many questions.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I guess that's why they were able to get that ruling and get sentenced on that, because...
They made a jury of their peers believe that they were were responsible for what happened.
Well, I'm leaning that way already and just have some bullet points right now, you know, from you.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Mm-hmm. It's maybe something.
But people blame the parents. They do. That's the first question is.
How could you not see this?
What were the parents doing? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's got a flipping arsenal in his bedroom. How did you not know?
Yeah.
You know, and those are unfair questions at the end of the day. Fair but unfair, whatever you want to call them.
But yeah, maybe I need some more details.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's
Sue Klebold herself said that's what she would think if this were not her own child, but someone else's child, she would automatically.
What were you doing? Where was,
how are you so disconnected from somebody you shared a roof with?
Mm-hmm. How did the police go in your home and find things that you didn't?
They never searched their rooms.
But it's so easy to sit here and be removed from the situation and ask that.
Well, you're going
to
be.
They didn't have a reason to search his room. He didn't give them.
I know, but like
you're going to be even. You're going to be even more enraged next week.
Gotcha. Were there obvious signs?
Well, it's easy to say obvious, like you said. It's easy to Monday morning quarterback this. We've already seen it happen. But there were a lot of disturbing things that progressively got worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, because like I probably go in my stepkids' rooms the least probably of any parent here. Like, it's upstairs. It's on the opposite side of the house. But I do venture there because, for one, you know, kids are nasty, and you got to make sure that they don't have food under their bed or something.
Exactly.
Or, you know, wet towels stuck somewhere, you know, like it's just like, and I'm not up there, you know, as much as most parents should be probably because I just am lazy, I guess. And I don't want to go all the way over there, but you have to go in a kid's room pretty frequently.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to get into a lot more of these specifics about what happened at Columbine that day. We're not going to walk down the hallways, these big wide hallways at Columbine. They built the structure back in the 70s before they were sure exactly how many people were going to move to this area because there was suburban sprawl in Denver.
Mm-hmm.
So they built this facility so that if it ended up not being needed for a school facility, they could turn it into a manufacturing facility. So it's just this big square box.
Okay.
A bunch of them or several of them rectangled and pointed, pushed up against each other.
It's weird.
Big, wide hallways. We're not going to go into the library or the cafeteria. Not today. We'll do that next week.
All right.
But briefly, here is a description of the aftermath inside Columbine. Bullet holes all over the banks of the blue lockers that were down the hallways. There were ceiling tiles that were removed because students had tried to climb up in the ceiling to hide. Oh. And one teacher climbed into the ceiling to try and hide, to go and get help, and she fell and ended up having to be taken to the hospital. I guess maybe she was one of the 24 injured. Mm-hmm. There were shoes left behind in the hallways and in, on the soccer fields. Kids literally ran out of their shoes.
Oh, gosh.
There were 10 bodies in the library where the students had cowered beneath tables trying to hide. One boy died clenching his eyeglasses. Another still had a pencil in his hand.
Oh.
One investigator said that it was like you walked in and time had stopped. These were just kids, and you have to think, what was their last moment like?
Mm. Terrifying.
Yeah. And just to be clear, there were two students who passed away outside the school building. The business teacher who died that day, his name was Dave Sanders, and we'll tell everybody's name next week. Mm-hmm. But Dave Sanders, he was one of the first ones shot. He was shot in the hallway while he was rushing students out of the cafeteria and down the hallway away from the sound of the gunfire to get them out of the door. And just as the kids rounded the corner and he turned around, they walked into the hallway and shot him twice, shot him in the back and in the jaw.
So did they just start shooting aimlessly and then were at people? Like, how did they hear? Or there were already people shot before him?
There were people shot before him. The first two were shot outside. So they're coming from their car towards the door. The because bombs don't go off. And they were like, ah, screw it. They come to the west entrance and they see people. It was a nice day, actually. Stephanie, you asked about the weather earlier. It was a nice spring day. It was warm enough in Colorado that April for people to grab their lunch inside and go out and sit under a tree in the parking area or near the parking lot and eat lunch. And those were the two, the first two students who were shot were doing that. Mm. Then they went inside the school building, threw some bombs. We'll go, we'll do the, we'll do the timeline next week.
Sorry, getting ahead of
you. That's okay. 10 of the teenagers, like I mentioned, died in the library. 12, if you count Harris and Klebold, because they shot themselves in the library after one last spray of bullets out the broken windows toward the police officers who were pulling up to the scene. And of course, the final act was the cruelest of all because by killing themselves, they denied the survivors any living perpetrators to march into the court or to march into the gas chamber.
It's a last form of control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No obvious choice or focus for the community's anger and their blame. And that would bounce around the Columbine Littleton area for years in a lot of different ways. If I had to sum up this entire story in a couple of sentences, this is them. Eric Harris wanted to kill people and become infamous, and Dylan Klebold was malleable and wanted to die.
Yeah, he was.
And they reached a compromise and both got what they wanted, like I said.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. He got, Klebold was seemed to be looking more for peace.
Yeah, yeah, he was miserable.
It's weird to say because of the acts that he did, but inner turmoil and just wanted peace from that.
Yeah, and I hate to mention the Batman movie again, but the combination of the two of them together kind of makes me feel like, you guys remember the 1989 Batman movie where Jack Nicholson as the Joker, he's poisoning the people of Gotham City with Smilex.
Yeah.
Yes.
But he mixes the chemicals into various consumer products. And it's, of course, Batman who figures it out. You may have to use the shampoo and the mouthwash and the deodorant to get the required dose of these chemicals that kills you because it has now become Smilex gas. That's who Klebold and Harris were. They combined together and created this toxic stew of death and rage.
Yeah.
And when we come back next week for the conclusion of this two-part series, we will perhaps, with the helps of, with Kelly Turner's help, her experiences and expertise in the field of psychology, attempt to further explain how these two damaged souls, these two kids, became mass murderers next week when we do part two.
Well, thank you, Scott, for that. And Stephanie will be back with us next week as well.
We're going to let her talk more next week. Sorry, it's not so scripted next week as it was this week.
Get her take on the aftermath of all of this. Thank you, and don't forget to check us out on Facebook, Instagram. Give us an email. Say something nice about us. Give us a 5-star review. And we'll give you a shout out.
Absolutely. We got anything else?
That's it.
All right. Good night, everybody.